in your spiritual walk, and something to consider. And I was studying last night and praying, you know, looking for in the inspiration of the Spirit and guidance, you know, as we endeavor as ministry to be useful and to be an instrument of God, you know, you really, that's our hope. And I kept getting drawn back to just a way of looking at things, I think. I think that as Christians, we are often defined by what we're against. It seems like that is more common these days than maybe in that I remember. Maybe it's the political season, it's, you know, because everybody's against. They're not so much for me; it's for against being against somebody else. And so it's easy to kind of slide into that. And you know, well, you know, we can be defined as being well against drunkenness, okay, against pornography, against lust, against gangster rap, against abortion, against broken families, against homosexuality, you know, and so there's this, I think that there's this perception that, you know, we're against everything, and we should be against some things. You know, but I also think we should be against humanist professors, evolution. You know, I find myself against mosquitoes, against allergies, against the Oakland Raiders. You know, those kinds of things as well help define us. And it's not just us. I was reading this survey that this company did, and it was about the perception of people about Christianity. Because in our little world, we live in little cocoons. And so we don't always see what the bigger picture is. We don't always see how we're perceived by others. And so they did this survey. It was primarily targeted towards younger people, so that, you know, trying to figure out what they think of. And this is not specific for our church. It's just Christianity in general. The number one thing that people perceive about Christianity is it's anti-homosexual. Okay, well, scriptures are pretty clear about that. I don't think we should change it. But that's the perception. And it was 91% of the people, of these people, were when they were polled. That's what they see. 87% saw Christianity as just being judgmental and hypocritical. Fair or not, that's the perception. We can argue about whether it's right or wrong. So, you know, like I said, right or wrong, it doesn't, fair or not, it doesn't, that doesn't really matter. It's about how we're perceived, and that's how we're seen. And so what I want to do this morning is spend some time instead of focusing on what we're against, what should be the perception? What should they perceive when they look at us? What should we be able to be an example of? And what should we, what are we for? What do we want to be known as? What do we want to be perceived as? And so I'm going to, my hardest problem was trying to figure out, whittle it down to a few scriptures that I could really focus on, because there's lots. But I want to spend some time just going through some of these scriptures about how we're supposed to be living our life, because when how we live our life is that's when we do it and people see it, that changes that perception. They have to see it to believe it. So I'm going to begin in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, and nothing new here, verse 9. It says, let love be without dissimulation. You know, it's insincerity. Dishonesty. You know, it's saying, it's always, I remember a comedian once that said, these ladies down in the South, they can tell all kinds of terrible things and then say, bless her heart, you know. And cover it up with, bless her anyway. But that just hides that true feeling within us. And so what he's saying is that you can't say you love somebody and then not act like it. People see it. Love isn't a word, it's an action. It's what we do that people perceive. They can recognize. Dissimulation is concealing that a true feeling by saying it's just a gloss of love. It's not really love. So our love has to be true and evident. And we'll talk more about that later, is that how do we do that? But I want to keep going here. It says, abhor that which is evil and cleave to that which is good. You know, it's, wait a minute, we're not supposed to be defined by what we're against. Well, sometimes we are. We have to be able to stand and say, no, that's wrong. But we hate the sin, but not the sinner. We have to be able to divide the action from the soul that has value. That's difficult. Sometimes this word love, it sure gets messy. Because it's easy to love someone who's nice. It's easy to love someone who responds with love. It's easy to love someone who's not, doing things that that we would be opposed to. It's harder to love the person without loving what they're doing. But that's what we're supposed to do. Well, how do you do that? Well, you still have to, there is a level of courtesy and compassion that we still have to have. Even though someone may be doing something that we find, that we don't like, we don't want to be around. But we still have to treat them as God's creation, made in the image of God. We have to cleave to that which is good, and what God made is good, and He made all of us. We'll continue on. Verse 10 says, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. You know, it's that that just tender affection. You like them. It's sincere. Concerned about welfare of our brothers and sisters. How are they doing? Checking on them. Seeing what's up in their lives. Seeing how they're doing spiritually. Sympathizing with them, helping them. All those things are part of that brotherly love. You know, in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 17, it tells us what a brother is born for. A brother is born for adversity. That doesn't mean that they're to fight each other. Right? A brother is born to be a help in times of need. And that's what we call each other brothers and sisters for, is that we're here to help each other in times of need. That we are a body. That where one is having a difficult time, that we unite and we help. In honor, preferring one another. Being humble. Not trying to be the boss, not trying to be, you know, striving for superiority, not striving to be, you know, better than someone else. Being humble. The classic example in my mind that I always go back to is blueberry pie. That when you're preferring your brother, you give them the bigger piece. That's preferring. Giving honor, giving that benefit to someone else. You know, part of being humble is actually probably one of the hardest parts about being humble is admitting a weakness and asking for help. Willing to say, I'm struggling. Help me. Pray for me. Willing to let somebody help. But that's part of being humble. Willing to say, I'm struggling. Because this may come as a shock. I struggle. I have a hunch that we all do. But sometimes we like to put on this our happy face and say, well, we're doing fine. When in reality, we're not. And how do we help each other if we don't know? Verse 11, it's not slothful in business. It doesn't mean just work hard when you're getting paid. Our business is everything we do. But it's by not being slothful means not sitting back and let somebody else do all the work. Not laying around, you know, it's that balancing between saying, okay, I need help, and letting everybody else do it, as opposed to doing the things that you can. Being active in the things that need done. Being willing to do a part of the work. Not being a Christian shouldn't be a spectator sport. It shouldn't be something where, you know, I think that's one of the things about being against something that's easier. I can be against anything and just stand there. I'm against that. I'm against that. I'm against that. But when you're for something, you have to be able to put yourself out and risk embarrassment, risk being rejected. Risk failure. But not being slothful means we're active. We're doing our part. We're doing the things we can. We don't have to do everything, but we have to do something. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, and patient in tribulation. That joyful hope. That's what we should be, about sharing is the reason for our hope. The reason and being joyful in a difficult world. Being joyful going through trials. Patient in tribulation. Patient in difficulty. Tough times don't last, but tough people do. James, real quick, I'm going to turn over to James. Chapter 1. Verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." Trials have a purpose. Difficulties have a purpose, and we have to allow them to work with us. Allow them to shape us. Allow them to mold us. And with that patience, knowing that this is for a reason, and this is going to help me grow. Patient in tribulation, and through that tribulation, keeping that hope, keeping that joy that we have because of God. I also want to turn back into Romans chapter 5 real quick. Romans chapter 5, verse 3. And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. These trials we have, we learn patience only going through them. It's like the classic story is, Lord, give me patience. And so what does he do? He gives you a trial that requires it. It's not like you download patience as an app. You get patience by experiencing it, by making a choice. And our experiences is what shape us. Our experiences is what strengthens us. Because I can't rely upon your experiences. They help. That's what we're supposed to share them with each other at testimony services, so they help each other. Saying, hey, I went through a trial, and I know that I got through it. So that when we're going through that trial, we know that God answers prayers. But I can't rely upon your experience. I have to have my own. I have to have my own patience. I have to have my own difficulties so that I can have my own hope. And I can have my own love. I'm not resting on somebody else's. I have it. Going back into chapter 12 of Romans again. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, and continuing instant in prayer. Persistent. perseverance, continuing, not stopping. The world, and this is something I struggle with, is I get so busy, I don't have time. I have time, I just choose not to use it the right way. I don't make the effort to do those things that I know I should do, because in my mind I think I have all these other things I should be doing, and what I should be doing is, more importantly, is spending time with God. Praying for the church, praying for our local, praying for our kids, praying for their nation, praying for the work, because it works. Verse 13, distributing to the necessity of saints and given to hospitality, willing to share what we have. Relieve a want. I'll turn over to Mosiah in chapter 2. Mosiah chapter 2 and verse 43, it says, I would that you should impart of your substance to the poor, every man according to that which he hath, such as feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the sick, and administering to their relief, both spiritually and temporally, according to their wants. All those things require us doing something, not just sitting back and letting somebody else. All those things are actions. All those things we're participating in, active in, not letting somebody else do it all, not letting some other, well, the government will take care of them, or whatever else. That when we see a need, we have a responsibility to help where we can, and see that all these things are done in wisdom and order. It is not requisite that a man should run faster than he has strength. And it is expedient that you should be diligent, that thereby he might win the prize. Therefore, all things must be done in order. If we give away everything we have, we no longer have the ability to give anything. I don't think that's God's intention. But we do have to be willing to share. I think we are. I'm not saying we aren't, but that's what people should see. That's what we should be modeling for people. That should be the example we set. You know, earlier in Mosiah talks about, you know, if you don't have it, at least your heart should be going out to them saying, I would if I could. Going back into Romans, verse 14. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. We'll talk more about that, in verse 17. That just because somebody does something to us doesn't give us privilege to treat someone else the wrong way. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. It's being with them, being alongside them, being in their good times and their bad times. They know that right next to them, there is someone that loves them. That is their biggest cheerleader, that wants them to do well. That's there to help. That's there to encourage. That's there just to cry with. Sometimes that's necessary too. But it's so that no one's alone, that there was always someone there that's next to them and are going through a hard time. Verse 16, be of the same mind one towards another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Living in harmony and agreeing as much as you can. I want to turn over to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, and I'm going to start with verse 1. It says, If there be therefore any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any bowels of mercy, fulfill ye my joy, that ye be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Agreeing. Having the same goals in life. Having the same goals as God's creation, having the same goals as the church. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. And look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And he goes on to tell him how Christ humbled himself for someone else's benefit. He was willing to say, okay, I'm willing to do this for somebody else. It's living in harmony and not fighting, not contending. And even if we can't agree on everything, we can agree to love each other. We can agree on the big things. Verse 17, recompense no man evil for evil. Provide all things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. In so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. And be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. We can't return railing for railing. We can't return evil for evil. We can't justify our actions by what somebody else does. We can't say, well, you know, they're just as bad. It doesn't matter. When people look at us as Christians and they see what we do, they don't care what the other person did. They only see what we do. You know, it's like when Christ was saying in Matthew, loving our enemies. That's what they should see. I was also going to read over in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 to 11. I'm not going to turn there, but it's a very similar list of things about how we live. You know, read it on your own, but living in harmony, being compassionate. And, you know, having that deep sympathy and deep, you know, with compassion means we sympathize with what somebody else is going through and then we do something about it. It's like everybody knows the story of the Good Samaritan, right? So the guy that gets beat up and left alongside the road, and the first two people who should have done something to help, you know, they don't look at it because they don't want to see it. But us as Christians are supposed to be like that Samaritan who is truly the, you know, a neighbor. He could see the hurt. He was conscious of it. He was aware of it. Didn't ignore the hurting. And there's a lot of hurting people in the world. And And we can't ignore it and pretend it's not there. And then the Samaritan actually did something for them. Got down with them and helped them. Dressed his wounds. Gave him a ride to the inn and paid for a month or two worth of room and board so he could recover. He risked. He put out effort to show and demonstrate his love. One of the things in it talks about in there in 1 Peter is, you know, we got to watch what we say. Because everything that we say comes back. Every idle word. And the power of what words can do for the edifying, to lift up and encourage, or for the to discourage and tear down are powerful. And so when people look at us as Christians, what should they see? They should see someone who's there to encourage, who has a positive attitude and communicates those things. Those are the things those are the things that people should perceive when they look at Christians, because it's right here in our books. So why don't they? Why don't they? Because apparently they don't see it. I think part of it is because it's not easy. It's not easy to always be good. It's not easy to always be kind. It's not always easy to love. But that was the example that God, that Christ gave us, was his love. You know, it's that natural man that we're all battling. And just because it's not easy doesn't mean we don't do it. I want to turn over to John chapter 13. John chapter 13, verse 34. It says, a new commandment, this is Christ's words, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another. And that's what it all comes down to, is when people see our love, when they see how we treat each other, when they see how we treat someone who doesn't deserve our love, when they see how we treat people at the grocery store, when they see how we treat people in our interactions of life, that's what they should see. What does that look like? What is it? You know, we talk about love sometimes, and I think that, which is good, I think we all should talk about love. But what is it, what does it look like practically? How do you actually show love? How do you live what we say we're supposed to do? And I got a short list here, but it's certainly not all-encompassing. But you show love by sticking with someone through tough times. When there's someone who's going through a difficult time, you stick with them. You're their friend. You're alongside them. You're someone that's friendly to talk to. You're not going to abandon them just because they're going through a hard time. You show love by adjusting to others, making some reasonable accommodations. Because guess what? We all have our quirks. Things that make it a little sharp edges, that make it a little difficult to get along sometimes. And sometimes we have to be willing to adjust ourselves. It's like the temperature in church. The exact same temperature is either too hot for some people or too cold for some people. And there's no equal balance. It's always different. Everybody's a little bit different. But when we love each other, we can adjust our comforts for someone else. We can adjust our preferences for particular things for someone else. You know, we talk, you know, in the example how Christ talks about, you know, love and the example of a marriage, there's lots of adjusting that go into a marriage. Learning how to deal with each other. And that's no difference with us here as brothers and sisters, adjusting to each other because we care about each other. Like, we show love by stepping out of our comfort zone. Being willing to risk rejection. Being willing to risk being made fun of. Being willing to risk failure. We show love by being willing to speak out instead of stay quiet. To actively participate and be a part, not just attend. But not going along with the crowd if we're out someplace else that we need to be able to be an example. That we're willing to stand on principles at times. Stepping out of our comfort zone at work, at school, to make a stand for something that's right, to defend someone who needs defending. We show our love by offering encouraging words, by lifting people up, by believing in their success, by supporting them. We show our love by putting someone else's needs above our own wants. And doing it not grumblingly. All right, well, I'll do it. I don't want to do it, but I know I'm supposed to do it, so I'll do it. That's not love. Loved it says we do it because we want nothing but the best for someone else. And that's all of us. That's what, you know, practical love looks like. I do want to turn a little bit into 1 Peter chapter 3. I was talking earlier about verses 8 through 11, and I'm not going to read that, but I want to continue on where that leaves off at verse 12. It says, "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? But and if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled." You know, I just got done talking about these things that we should be, that outside individuals should perceive in us. And as an example, what they should see. And he's talking about how we, you know, if we do those things, then we may suffer. That's okay. If society doesn't like it. But it talks about there's a lot of terror out there. There is fear in the world today we live in. There's a lot of fear. There's fear about the future. There's fear about the presidential candidates. There's fear about the financial system. There's fear about ISIS. There's fear about world events. There's all kinds of fear out there. And you know, I can't hardly go to work and the guys aren't talking about it. People are worried about what's happening to our country. They're worried about what next week and next year brings. And, you know, we have a responsibility to be an example. Verse 15 says, "But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you for a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." We have a responsibility to be an example, and so that people perceive. They wouldn't ask us if we didn't look like, "Hey, why are you so happy? The world's going to pot, not just Colorado." Because I have joy. Because I have hope. Because I have love. How can you have love when there's all this kind of stuff going on? Can you be happy and afraid at the same time? Think about it. Can you be happy and afraid at the same time? No, you can't. You can't truly be happy and afraid at the same time. Can you think clearly and be afraid at the same time? No. Can you be confident and fearful? Can you be merciful and fearful and afraid? No, all those things are, they cancel each other out. They can't be together. Fear is like a great big bully at the school. It's rude. It's unproductive. It just pushes its way around. And it can get in your mind, in your heart. But when you have love and you have hope and you have joy, it has no place. We have no reason to fear. 2 Timothy tells us that we have not been given the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. That's what we've been given. Fear never saved a marriage. Fear never pulled a family out of poverty. Fear never led a friend to Christ. Fear never bore a testimony of God's blessings. Fear didn't do anything. Fear never reached out to someone who needed help. Courage does that. Faith does that. Love does that. Perfect love casteth out fear. That's what 1 John tells us. You know, that's my goals for what I was hoping to get across, is that not to be defined by what we're against, but to be an example of the things we're for. Live our faith so people can see love. So they can see joy, so they can see happiness. Because they're going to keep looking for it. And when they see we have it, they're going to ask. And we have to be ready. But they have to see it. And they don't it doesn't happen but when we say it. It's when we do it. So that's my hope, is that we can be a light for others that might be in fear in the day that we live in.